Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with life coach Cindy Chavez. Today is, what day is this? This is Wednesday, May the 6th, 2020, 4 p.m. New York time. Wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm happy to be talking with my good friend Cindy. We have had something in common for the last few weeks. We both celebrated birthdays. We got the birthdays behind us.
Right. Yeah. You know?
But yeah. It's a good time of year. Well, spring is always a good time for me. I don't know about you. For me, spring is like my favorite time of the year. So when I combine those two together, that's a nice combination.
Yeah. I love spring and fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more partial to warm weather than cold weather. But spring and fall, especially here where I live down in Louisiana in the South, where it's so hot.
Right.
Those are the more temperate months, right?
Yes.
So it's just very nice. And of course, everything's starting to bloom and all of that. So it's been great. So I had a great birthday. And how was your birthday? It was just this past week.
Yeah, it was just really fabulous. I had a lot of people listening to the show greeted me. That was really nice.
Oh, that's nice. A lot of friends
and so forth. So yeah, I mean, it was great. It was wonderful. Plus, I had my favorite dessert of all. I don't do birthday cake. My favorite dessert is a sour cream and cream cheese pie with blueberries on top.
Ooh.
And it's delicious.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
it's really tasty.
Yeah.
And to make it even better, my wife makes it for me, and she has agreed to make it with low sugar content. I prefer no sugar content, but she makes it very low because it needs a little sweetening.
You know, I think that I don't have as much of a sweet tooth. Well, I know I don't. When I was a kid, my parents would take me to this place where it wasn't an IHOP, but they were still famous for like pancakes with like fruit and whipped cream and all this stuff. And I would be 5 years old and the waitress would say, do you want strawberries? And I would say, no, thank you. Just butter. No whipped cream? No, thank you. What about syrup? No, I didn't want anything sweet. I just wanted the pancakes and the butter. So I've never had like a real sweet tooth. And I notice when I make things like the dessert you're talking about, sometimes I'll put half the amount of sugar the recipe calls for. And to me, it's sweet enough. And no one else ever complains either. So I think that sometimes we can just get rid of some of it at least, right?
Well, I have to admit, I've kind of talked her down over the years. She has a big sweet tooth, right?
Ah.
You know, so she tried it at half and then she got it down to about a quarter. And I'm basically pushing it down. How far can you get down to before you lose any interest in having the dessert? And that's what I got her down to.
That's pretty good. You gotta have some sugar in there, right?
Yeah. I even got her to make it one time with a sugar substitute, but she didn't like that too much, so that's all right.
Yeah, it's hard to cook with them. You know, they don't really measure sometimes. But an interesting thing, you know, we were talking before the podcast today, the topic that's on everybody's mind 24/7, the whole pandemic and everything. And we know that sugar, I've read some studies that talk about sugar suppressing the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mention this to you before the show, but I'm curious if you, are you on Joe Dispenza's mailing list? We talk about him occasionally, his books, some of his studies.
I am not. I didn't realize he had one. I'm going to have to get onto that list.
Well, he sent an email recently that I thought was really wonderful. What he was talking about was opening the heart center.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't give a lot of information about how to do this. But what he did say was that if you will open your heart center, and I think the way he described it is that you do that by focusing on emotions that are heart-centered, love, joy, peace, gratitude, right, appreciation, that if you will do this, and he says they have science to back this up, that 4 days of it causes your immune system to create 50% more, I think, of the IgA, which is the immunoglobulin A or whatever the immune system uses to fight viruses, right?
Okay.
So he's saying 4 days. And so I immediately thought about the people at HeartMath and the work that they do with meditation and connecting to the heart, and remembered of, I think we might have even done this on our podcast maybe a year or so ago, but a very, very simple exercise is that you take a deep breath. And as you do, imagine that you're, well, let me back up. Think of something that you really appreciate or that brings you joy? When I asked myself this question, this is funny. I belong to an online community, and one of the teachers in the community has a new baby that's probably a little less than a year old, right at that kind of giggly stage where right. they're so, and this baby sometimes comes to the call, right, with her. And the baby can't talk yet, but it babbles in a way where it actually sounds like it's making some kind of sentences, right? And it's smiley and bouncy. And it's the first thing I thought of when I asked myself, think of something that brings you joy. It's like watching that baby. I just can't stop smiling when I see her, right? Okay, so think of something that you appreciate or brings you joy. Now just put that thought aside because I'm going to ask you to pick it up in a second.
Okay.
Then you're going to breathe a deep breath, but pretend like you're, instead of breathing through your nose or your mouth, that you're actually breathing through your heart. And you take that deep breath in through your heart and then exhale, imagining that you're breathing in and out through your heart. And you do this a few times, inhale, sometimes like maybe to the count of three or five, just a really deep breath, and then exhale. And once you get that going, you're breathing in through your heart. Just think of that thing that brings you joy. And notice what it feels like in your body. When you've just opened that heart center and now you're appreciating that thing that brings you joy with your heart center open. For me anyway, it feels so good. It's like a light, joyful, wonderful, comforting, every good word I can think of kind of feeling. So the idea is that if we do that every day, and I've been doing it when I think about it, and especially when I lay down to go to bed and I'm still, I'll spend a few minutes just breathing in and out through my heart that way. And then think of something that just, you know, anything that brings me joy that I appreciate. Joe Dispenza says, if we do this on that by day four, we will have doubled like our immune system power.
Really? Interesting.
So I've been wanting to talk about it ever since I read it. And I keep meaning to share it with my little group that I share with, and I keep forgetting it. So while we were waiting for the show to start, I was like, oh,
congratulations. You just remembered. So, you know, a little pat on the back there. That's good. That's really good. I like that. Yeah. That's a nice exercise because it taps into the heart area and kind of reminds you to stay open. That's the best place to stay open. And I was attempting it while you were talking there just to see what would happen, what I would feel. And I did feel like there was a little bit of a surge that happened when I focused back on the thing that I really liked a lot. That's an interesting little exercise. It's a nice way to get into high vibe place really quickly.
I would suggest doing it the way I've been doing it is I've been breathing in and out to a count of five inhale and five exhale, 10 times.
Okay.
So, you know, especially when I'm laying there in bed, I'm getting ready to go to sleep. When you think about it, it's not even a full minute, you know, to do that.
Right.
Just breathing in and out and then thinking of whatever it is. And I'm like, wow, there can be no, you know, unwanted result from this, right? I mean, you're relaxing, you're thinking of something good. So in the moment, to me anyway, it's just a great thing to do. And then if it's also boosting my immune system, then yeah, let's just do this every day.
Jeffrey in our live stream is saying, thank you, I'm practicing it now. So you've already made an impact.
Yeah.
Just for Jeffrey on the live stream, not counting all the other listeners.
Well, which is great. With some of the people that I hang out with, coaches, et cetera, have been talking about this phrase that you may have seen pop up lately in the news. It's a term called allostatic load.
I have not heard that.
What it is it's the wear and tear that happens to your body when you're experiencing chronic and unrelenting stress.
Mm.
And so, you know, we've been talking about our clients and how to help people and how to help ourselves through this time where I see it as a double stress. There's the stress of just knowing that this pandemic is happening and maybe being worried about ourselves, our own health, our family, our friends, you know, the world at large, politics, whatever, like everything is so all encompassing. But then there's also the added stress of routines changing, staying at home, being with people 24/7, or maybe being alone 24/7. You know, some of us are alone and some of us are not. But all those extra added stress. Today at lunch, I was reading the news and I saw an article in the New York Times that was asking who is doing all the extra, the homeschooling and the domestic chores? Like, who is doing that? right? And I said, yeah, we know what it's going to say. Well, what surprised me was that over, I think it said 70% of the dads said that they were definitely carrying the majority load of homeschooling. Hmm. But only 3% of the moms agreed.
Oh, dear. Slightly different perspectives there.
So when you that's like a huge discrepancy, right? It's not like 58% and 61%. It's 70 or 80% and then 3%. So it caused me to think about, not only is there all this extra stress, but there's some discrepancy in who's handling it. That's a lot of friction right there. And so coaching people, like we talked about last week, we've had a lot of people that are really struggling with their domestic situations, with their relationship situations, and how do we deal with that? So I think this little exercise from, you know, the heart math people is one of the ways we can deal with this, is that bringing yourself into a place of coherence and alignment and peace, instead of, you know, I told you I was going to tell you a story. My husband and I were out this weekend just to drive, like we had to go down the block and back. Mm-hmm. And in the process, there were some people on the road with a golf cart, which I don't think is even legal in a residential. But besides that, it was two people on a bike and some teenagers in a golf cart. And we went around them, and like we both cycle, so we're very conscious of obeying the laws of the road and, you know, giving cyclists space and all of that. And they weren't riding, they were just standing there, and we went around them. And the one of the people got very upset and was kind of showing their, throwing the arms up and gesticulating and mugging and, you know, being, and so we stopped the car. And they came up to the car and proceeded to scream in our face obscenities for the longest time as we just sat there looking back at them. They were so angry that they thought we did something wrong. We either, I don't know, we came too close when we went around them, or, you know, but it was like, oh my goodness, it was really awful. And we didn't know what to say, but just sat there listening to this, just screaming, full out screaming at top volume. And finally, my husband said, I am really sorry that I have upset you so much, and I hope you'll forgive me, which kind of threw this person off a little bit, like they didn't really know
well,
how to
reply. They were looking for a fight. They didn't get a fight. That was the
then
problem.
Then they yelled a couple more times. They yelled a couple more times, and then they walked away, and we drove away. I was like, wow. So, you know, the whole idea that I talk about is like, learning how to enjoy things that don't feel good, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked at my husband and I said, wasn't that great? Didn't that feel wonderful? Yeah, no, it didn't really feel wonderful. We did laugh about it, and we talked about it a lot. And we thought, what would we have done different? But the thing that keeps coming up to me in my mind when I think about this episode is that someone was just really stressed out.
No kidding.
And just exploded at the slightest. You know, here we're in a residential, we weren't going, you know, 30 miles an hour. We're probably going 8 miles an hour. It just went around, right? But it just, it's like sometimes when people are, it's that allostatic load, right? Sometimes people are carrying so much stress. It's just like the straw that breaks the camel's back.
That's one of those times where it's really useful to ask yourself, whose energy is this?
Yeah.
And you didn't actually have an issue with that, I'm sure, just because of who you are and, you know, what I know that you know. But for any of us, it can be a very discouraging and even frightening thing to run into a situation like that and to forget to ask the question, because then we start to think, well, what did I do?
Right. And there was some of that, right? I mean, like I said, we talked about it probably way too much, because it just kept, you know, it was such a shocking display that it was like, how... we couldn't help but ask, like I said, what will we do different? Like, what did we do actually? Like what just happened?
Yeah.
And if I would have been by myself, I mean, you just said, you know, it would be scary for some people. Yeah, it would be been scary for some people. And just, but it's one of those things that I'm noticing that I think is connected to just an increased level of stress. And we never know what's going to cause that increased level of stress for people. Like I said, for some people, like, I don't have a problem staying in. I'm kind of a homebody. I work from a home office. I'm home a lot of the time. It's enough for me to go walk around the block and, you know, but other people are different. Some people really need to be outside a lot. Some people need connection, you know, face to face with other people, and they're not getting that. So whatever it is, part of this little exercise that we did at the beginning of the show where we breathe in through our heart, it sounds like such a small, like, that really help anything, but it really does. It has a huge effect if we'll just take the time to do it. So,
well, any of these exercises we can do that helps us get into a better feeling place for whatever reason. I mean, in this case, it's also for building up the immune system and strengthening our ability to fend off disease.
Right.
But whatever we can do to get into that better place, it's going to pay off. And I experience it most succinctly during this period. When I compare what it's like when I'm at home and what it's like when I go out. When I'm at home, I'm in a great space because, you know, Louise and I don't have any difficulties with our relationship. You know, we're just kind of hanging out. We're watching stuff. There's been some times where we've been experiencing the outside stresses, you know, but we've done a pretty good job, I think, at focusing on what feels good and what's important to us and so forth. So most of the time inside, we're feeling pretty good. And then we'll go to the store. And you get at the store and you first of all, you're reminded exactly what's going on because you have to put a mask on, right?
Yeah.
And then you put the mask on, you go in the store, you feel like, you know, you're ready. Well, okay, you know, bring me my operating room gown. I'm ready to go, doc, you know. And you're looking at all these terrified faces. The interesting thing is the terrified faces have kind of evolved over the last couple of weeks. They're still terrified, but they have smiles now, which is really interesting.
Well, it's interesting. Are you under, like, do you have a mandate there where you have to wear a mask when you go out?
Yes. Not when I go out, but when we go into a space where we're within 6 feet of somebody, unavoidably.
Got it. Yeah. I don't know that we have that here. Now, when we do go out, most people, and like, you know what, today's May 6th. So right. I started isolating myself March 8th. So I've been in for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I've only gone out a handful of times, and I haven't gone into any like retail places. So my husband has been our designated grocery shopper, and he goes and does that. And because he has 6 or 7 planets in Virgo, we now have spreadsheets for all of our inventory of groceries. It's really fabulous.
I love it.
Huh? He's great. It's fantastic. He knows how many everythings we have and how many we need, and it's fantastic. Plus, whenever he grocery shops, he brings me back just, you know, armloads of flowers. So you can see it.
Oh, well, they're gorgeous.
The whole house is, yeah, it's great. But what he has noticed and told me about is the stores seem to be doing a great job here of keeping only letting so many people go in at a time and keeping everyone, like, they have tape on the floor every so, you know, so
oh, yeah,
you're in a section, no one will come up until you're done. But then he has seen people come in, no masks, no gloves, recognize each other and go, hey, and go over and start hugging each other. And it's just like, oh my gosh. And so that's the thing, you know, that can be stressful if you are attempting to comport yourself by certain guidelines. And then you see people that aren't, then it feels like, oh my goodness, like, these people aren't playing by the rules, right? So there are a million different things right now that can be causing stress. Mm-hmm. And we know that when we get stressed, that it affects our relationships. Even if we're not stressed at that person, right? It affects, because it affects everything.
Sure.
So exercises like this and taking responsibility for how we feel. And we've talked about this before. Just being able to have a good feeling vocabulary, which, you know, sad, mad, glad, afraid. Those are the four main feelings, but then there are so many other ones: disappointed, frustrated, discouraged, encouraged, peaceful, happy, joyful. You know, if we can work on that vocabulary, then even when we feel something uncomfortable, I was just coaching someone around this, that anger is okay. It's okay to feel angry. It's okay to feel frustrated. All those things that we've kind of judged as wrong and bad. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we can deal with those things is just to say it. Like, mm-hmm. I feel so angry when I hear about this, right? Not I am angry, because I am so much more than anger, but I feel angry sometimes. So just to be able to say, I feel sad when I experience this. I feel angry. I feel frustrated about this. Sometimes that, just verbalizing that, takes the sting out of the emotion, and then it just passes, right?
Sure. Well, you're recognizing it. You're embracing what it is that you're actually feeling. And of course, it's going to take the sting out because it's being recognized.
Exactly. And we can be witnessed and we can be validated, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I say to you, oh, well, did you see this thing on the news? I saw it last night and I feel so angry when I see this. You know, if you say to me, oh, I saw it and it didn't bother me too much, but I thought about this and it made me think about this. Or if you say, I saw it, it's frustrating to me too. You know, all of that is validation. And then, right. And then those emotions can kind of leave, they dissolve, instead of judging yourself that those emotions are bad, pushing them down, not expressing them at all. None of that ever works.
Yep, that's true.
Doesn't work to disperse it, to dissolve it. It just stays there. And
well, it does work to build up the frustration and the anger.
Yes, it does work to do that. If you want to be successful at building up more and more uncomfortable emotions until you're a powder keg and someone goes by you and you go off on them and call them many names, then that's a good way to do it. Just don't ever express your emotion until it's built up so much that it's like a bomb going off. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Just thinking again about the story that you told the people who were exploding outside of your car, and I didn't have an experience like that one, but it does remind me of one time. I don't remember where I was. Was it a plane, train station? It was some public transport type situation, and I don't know exactly what it was. But it was a case where somebody was going off and had decided they were going to go off on me. I was sitting down at the time, and I'm a pretty big guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so this guy went off on me, and I couldn't really see who it was, so I got up to see who it was, and he saw my size and just stopped.
Well, I'm 5'1", so that doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work.
But I think that's so awesome. Yeah.
It's funny, though, because it shows a few things. First of all, it shows that when the situation has some kind of change in it, and that was just a minor change, really. But
right.
When it has some kind of change in it, it's almost like we take a breath and we just stop and say, you know, what am I doing?
Whew, yeah. Right.
And that's, I think, what happened. I don't know what would have happened in your situation if I had been there and gotten out of a car and, you know, they saw how big I was. Maybe they would have just screamed louder. It could have worked either way. You know, you never really know. But
that might have been the case, because this person didn't seem like they had much of a handle on no brakes. There were no brakes happening here. Full throttle. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you
mentioned, like seeing somebody come in without a mask, right? Or, you know, that kind of thing. And my wife has very much the same kind of reaction you were talking about having. I actually have a different reaction. And I have to kind of hold it in a little bit because I don't want to offend anybody. But whenever I see somebody not following the rules like that, I think to myself, ooh, a rebel.
Right. Well, you know, and it wasn't so much the not wearing the mask as it was shaking hands and hugging. And, you know, here in the South, like even when you first meet someone for the very first time, someone says, oh, Walt, I'd like you to meet, you know, so-and-so, very often that person is going to hug you.
Mm.
It's like they're, you know, in the South, hugging like someone's neck is a valid greeting. It just happens all the time.
Right.
So when people see each other, there's a lot of, you know, we've been, even before all this, right before all of this, maybe the first week in March, the last week in February, where we started paying attention, we started like fist bumping people instead of shaking their hand, right? But yeah. Everywhere we go, people want to hug us and shake our hand, and we're like, let's just keep a little distance. And so it's not so much the masks and gloves or not wearing them, but it's seeing people interact with lots of hugging and shaking hands, and it's like, oh my gosh, y'all, stop.
I guess my point, though, is that you can have different people who will have different reactions to the same situation.
Correct.
And it kind of illustrates the fact we actually get to choose how we're going to react in any given situation. Not that we always have the presence of mind to remember, oh, I can react differently from the way I'm feeling. I don't have to go into this rage that I feel like going into, or I don't have to go into this laughter mode I feel like going into.
Right.
We don't normally do that, but we can. It is possible to learn to do that.
Right. And that's the whole thing with, you know, recognizing, and I know this is, I always say to clients that I'm teaching this stuff to, is that this is advanced practice.
Yes.
Right. But the idea that we not only choose our thoughts and our emotions, but we can choose how we frame a sensation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I tell the story about, we all know, especially with this pandemic, we know that like body aches, if you have the flu or maybe, you know, this disease, that your muscles will ache. Well, your muscles also ache if you go ride your bike 50 miles or if you do a hard workout in the gym.
Sure.
So if you wake up in the morning after a hard workout, or you've been, you know, working in your yard for all day and you wake up and your muscles feel sore, you may have a response like, oh, this is kind of a good thing. I'm building some muscle. Man, I worked out hard yesterday.
Sure.
Good for me. No pain, no gain. But if you just wake up and your muscles are sore and you don't know why, you may be fearful and think, oh, no, I hope I don't have the flu or whatever. So we get to decide how we experience sensation. And I think I talked about this, I've talked about it lots in the last few months. Because my wrist, I had my wrist in a wrist brace for a while.
Yep.
I don't have a wrist brace on now.
Hooray!
Yep, and I am writing again. And the pain is maybe at about 10%, where before it was like, it was debilitating. I couldn't write. The thing that finally worked, I was doing the Neville vignette, right?
Mm-hmm.
I told you that I was imagining myself writing. My short little vignette was that I was writing and that I was saying to my husband, it's so great to be able to write again with no pain.
Oh,
that was my whole vignette. And I was doing that over and over as I fell asleep. The pain was lessening, but then it got to a point where it just kind of stayed there, and it still was really bothersome. And then I decided, okay, I teach this all the time. Maybe I can perceive this pain in my wrist as a pleasurable sensation.
Ooh.
What if this felt good to me? What if I liked it?
That's advanced.
And it's almost gone. Mm-hmm. And whenever I do feel it, I think, oh, yeah, that's right. I like that feeling. It doesn't hurt. I don't see that, right? So it reminds me of the movie Lawrence of Arabia. Remember that mm-hmm. movie?
Okay. I remember the movie. I'm not sure what reference you're
making. There's a scene where he puts out either a match or a candle flame with his fingers.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Right. And somebody says to him, that it must hurt. And he said, well, of course it hurts. The trick is not minding that it hurts.
Right.
Right. So I decided that I just didn't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't worry about it. The other thing I stopped doing is wondering if it was going to heal.
Oh, God, yes.
So what I mean by that is like, I realized that I would have a thought that would be like, I wonder if this is going to heal soon. I wonder if this is going to stop hurting. I wonder if it'll be like this forever. I wonder. And I thought, wait a minute. If I'm wondering, then I'm not consciously creating anything. It's completely outside of my control if I'm just wondering if it's going to happen.
That's true.
So no, it's not going to stay forever. And it is going to get better. And you know, that Emile Cooey affirmation from way back, right? Every day and every way I'm getting better and better. So I started with that. And then I worked my way into the Neville thing. And then I had the realization that I'm teaching people the shadow integration all the time. And part of it is reframing sensation. So I just decided I would actually enjoy the feeling that I was feeling in my wrist when it flared up.
And it seems to have worked.
It's almost completely gone.
That's
and I'm writing in a journal twice a day, which I wasn't able to even write a grocery list before. The pain was so bad.
Right.
and I'm writing, and yeah, it's like amazing.
That's really interesting.
So I know I feel like I've gone in a big circle here, but I said that to say, even in even in situations like we had where somebody was kind of going off on us in a very crazy way, we joked about it a little bit afterwards and said, wow, didn't that feel good? Now, I always have to make this disclaimer that I'm never advocating that you should stay in any kind of situation relationally that is abusive.
Right.
So we're not talking about trying to enjoy while somebody's abusing you. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
But with our own little frustrations and, you know, stresses that we have, it's a trick that we can employ a little bit, see if it works.
I think the same rule applies with this as applies with any time that we are exploring contrast, as Abraham calls it.
Yeah.
And that rule is very simply, you can explore it. Just don't live there.
Yes.
You don't have to live in it. Just, you know, explore it for a little bit until you get an idea of, well, in Abraham's case, they explain it as, you know, you've lived in it long enough to decide that you don't want that. So it fires off that rocket of desire and you decide, well, what is it that I do want instead? What is that rocket all about?
Right.
And that's how you kind of turn it around. Well, not quite the same exercise, but a very similar result in that you're not staying focused on it for a long period of time. You're embracing it. You're finding a way to come to terms with it so you can let go of it.
The other thing is not to judge it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm constantly reminding myself that our level of consciousness is directly related to our lack of judging.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So a very high level of consciousness, let's just say Jesus, right, could walk on water and work miracles. And then the very, very low level of consciousness is when we've all been there in that kind of victim energy mode where life is happening to us. And we can't control anything and everything sucks and it's not going to get any better. And why is this happening to me? So that's the very lowest level. And you can't create much consciously down there except for more victimhood and more things that don't feel good. And so we can assess. there is a right kind of judgment. And that is when we're making a judgment about how something affects us, right? We're assessing the level of something.
Right.
Like when we're trying to determine the level of sensation, like I said, the pain level was like 10% or less, right? So we use these numbers to try to get a grasp on something. That's okay. We do that all the time. So we have to use logical judgments, intuitive judgments to figure things out. But what I'm talking about is labeling things good or bad.
Right.
For the most part, that's what I'm always going to be speaking about when I talk about judging things. So we say, oh, this situation is bad. And sometimes where we have a phrase we call a blessing in disguise,
mm-hmm.
right? Where we say, oh my gosh, I thought this was so bad. And guess what happened? You know, right. Something really great came out of this. So when we are, like you said, and if you want to experience contrast, someone you don't know walking up to your car and screaming in your face, that's pretty much contrast.
I think it qualifies. Yeah, that definitely is up there.
But all the contrast, I mean, we're all experiencing some level of contrast, especially now.
Mm.
If we'll stop judging it as bad
right.
or good, right, whatever we're experiencing and get curious about it, curiosity and judgment can't coexist.
This is true.
So if we let go of the judgment and get curious instead, we've automatically raised our level of consciousness closer to the level where we can create at will.
That's the coolest part. When you can create at will, then you know you've grown, you know you've really developed a skill, which is great. I love it.
Yeah.
Josephine in our live stream brought up a question. I think she was directing it at you based on what you were talking about. So I thought I'd bring it up to you to see if you knew about this guy's work. Do you know the work of Gary Zukav? Excuse me.
I do. Gary Zukav wrote a book, and maybe Josephine knows the title off the top of her head.
All she said was he talks about the danger of bottling up emotions on the heart and on the heart of the soul.
Well, he wrote a book called The Seat of the Soul. That was one of the books he wrote. And there's another book too. And I read them both and they're really fantastic books.
Okay.
Very, very enlightening books. I read them probably more than, I want to say, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I can't pick out any exact things, but I do remember that they were good.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm curious about that, though. I think that, you know, we have all these energy centers in our body, mm-hmm. which we refer to as chakras. Mm-hmm. And we have one, the heart chakra, we have the throat chakra that affects our voice. We have, you know, the third eye, intuition, the crown chakra, all the different energy centers, and we want to keep them balanced. So if we're talking about a danger, it may be just not holding something in balance, but mm-hmm. it's very important that we not just focus on one thing. But I think that opening our heart right now, especially if it helps the immune system, I'm willing to do that.
It also helps with dealing with the stress situations when they come up, just in terms of dealing with them. I mean, yes, certainly we want to keep the immunity high. That's
right.
But it just staying open like that, it's almost like you put up a little defense against the emotions of the world that you don't want to have to come crowding in on your life just because you're in that place.
Well, and that's why I said, you know, that the immediate results of it are so great. Just the immediate experience of those deep breaths, breathing in and out through your heart, imagining something that brings you joy. I mean, you feel it in the body, and it's a nice thing. It brings peace, brings some grounding. So to me, we have a word here in Louisiana. The word is lanyap. It means a little extra.
Okay. Right?
So if you go in and you buy a dozen donuts and the baker throws an extra one in there, that's just lanyap, right? Okay. It's a little extra. And to me, the immune system boost is just lanyap on top of what you get immediately from just practicing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if we'll build it into our self-care daily habits that we just begin to do automatically, it's really nice. It brings an even sense and a sense of grounding and peace.
Now, I have to say, if I try to do it at night, like you were talking about, I do certain things at night, but I can predict what's going to happen if I try to do 10 breaths in a row, you know, holding each one for like 5 seconds or whatever, and then doing the whole exercise. I guarantee you by around breath six, I'll be asleep.
That's okay. You know, it's kind of funny. I've heard a lot of people say that when they meditate, and even I remember one time, maybe a year and a half ago, we led a meditation on the podcast.
Yes.
And someone that was listening live said, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I just heard you ending the meditation. And we laughed and I said, I don't know if I fell asleep or what happened. I was really relaxed. And all of a sudden I heard you counting us out. My thoughts have always been that if you fall asleep meditating, that you need sleep more than the meditation.
Mm.
And that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's true.
For people like me, that I often do fall asleep if I'm laying down for meditation. So a lot of times I will stay in a seated position to actually just do a regular meditation so that I don't drift off to sleep. But as far as nighttime, going to sleep is kind of the goal, so I wouldn't worry about it. I just do it 5 times
instead. Hey, I've also had something come up in the last few days. I think it's actually been going on for some time, but I kind of pieced it together the last few days. As I've been working on this computer project, writing this software that I've been trying to write for the last 6-7 months, something like that, whenever I run into a block of some kind, you know, something I don't understand, something I haven't learned it yet, or I'm in the middle of learning it and I've only got it halfway, or, you know, that kind of, I've had like a lot of those experiences, far more than actual writing code experiences over the last 6 months. But the thing that I've been noticing is if I run into a block like that and it keeps me from getting at the answer for at least 5 to 10 minutes, I can't believe I'm saying this, I fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I had been doing a lot of falling asleep in my chair, which is very much unlike me. I don't normally do that.
Okay,
but I've been doing it a lot lately. And then just in the last few days, I realized it was correlated with when I was running into a block. So it's almost like my body has developed this defense against blocks. Like, don't keep focusing on the block. I'll put you to sleep if I have to in order to get you to stop focusing on the block.
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind here. A couple of stories about famous inventors and scientists who would actually, now I can't remember who this one is. I want to say Einstein, but I might be completely wrong. But there was one story about a scientist that when he got into that situation where he was at a block where he couldn't figure something out, he would go take a nap in a chair, and in his hand, he would hold his keys, because he knew as soon as he fell asleep, his hand would open and the keys would hit the floor and he would wake up. Uh-huh. And he would very often have the answer to his problem at that point.
Oh, I see.
So, Scott, we're just talking about this weekend. The man that invented, I mean, you can Google this and find it, that invented the automatic sewing machine.
Okay.
Like, was working and working and working, couldn't just get it to work, but was almost there. But something wasn't right. And then fell asleep and had a dream. And in the dream, there were all these natives that were holding spears. And and when he looked at the spears all had a hole at the top where the point was. And he realized that what he had been doing was with the sewing machine was he had the hole for the thread at the back of the needle, like a hand sewing needle.
Oh, okay.
And he realized the hole needed to be down by the point.
Right.
Right? And he changed it and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole, I have a whole book somewhere of these stories of how people have used, I don't know, really know what they call it, but it's a quick nap. And like I said, they had ways of waking themselves up mm-hmm. where they would like the one guy that would hold his keys so that when he dropped them, that would wake him up and he would have the answer. So I'm like, Walt, this is you. This is your brain saying, wait, I know how to find the answer to this. You just need a quick nap.
And to hang on to the keys.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my question I was going to ask you. Like, have you noticed that after this happens that you are able to resolve the, you know, find a solution to the problem quickly?
Not in the way, not in the way you're telling in the story that you just told. What I have found has worked is I use the fact that I'm falling asleep as a reminder that I need to take a break.
Okay.
And so if I fall asleep, then my goal is to wake up so I can get up and take a break. If I don't fall asleep, then my goal is to get up and take a break. So one way or another, I'm getting a break in,
right.
You know?
Okay.
And during the break, my whole purpose is to take my mind completely off the thing I was working on. Talk about anything, do anything, dishes, mm-hmm. talk with my wife about something, read a magazine, anything to just take my mind off of it. And then I don't have a time limit that I place. It's more like, how far do I have to go into this getting away experience before I finally feel like I'm free of the angst associated with it? That I'm looking for, I've eliminated that emotion. That emotion is gone, and now I can go back with a clearer head. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I don't always have a solution at that point, but I find that I'm able to zero in on a solution quicker through various kinds of testing techniques and so forth, because you do a lot of testing when you're a programmer.
Right, and it makes sense because it's like, you have a wider sense of possibility than a narrow, like when you're working on one thing and we narrow ourselves down and we can't get out of that groove or rut, whatever it is, to think in a different way. And so by getting up, walking around, talking about anything besides that, it's like it takes the focus off that. Sometimes when I have some kind of problem that I get, like you said, taking the emotion away from it.
Yes.
When I have a situation that's like starting to frustrate me, I can't figure it out, I don't feel clear about what I'm doing next or whatever. Those are the kind of situations that have a tendency to maybe keep me awake at night.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go lay down to go to sleep and my brain starts working on that problem or whatever. And I'm thinking about it and I'm figuring it out. And, you know, I've written several books. So it could be like, you know, where am I going next in the book, or how am I organizing this, or what is my schedule with clients like tomorrow? I mean, you know, it's not like it's big, crazy emotional stuff. Sometimes it's just so many things on my plate that I'm trying to organize and I can't figure out how to make it work. One of the things that I do is I will tell my brain, be like, okay, brain, I'm going to go to sleep because I need sleep. And you figure this out. This is this is your task for while I'm sleeping, figure this out and just give me the answer when I wake up. And I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I would wake up and I'll be like, yes, that, why did I think of that before? That's an excellent idea.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's very effective.
I think what you said is like taking the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I'll be like, okay, I'm not going to lose sleep. I'm not going to be frustrated. I don't like all this confusion that I'm feeling. So Brian, you take care of it. Just do your work.
And one of the emotions, I can't really put a typical emotion label to it. Like, well, this is anger, or this is fear, or this is joy. It's not that kind of easily labeled emotion. But there's an emotion that I associate with the state that I get into when I'm blocked. Because when I'm blocked, I tend to, okay, I'll think about this possible solution. No, that can't work. I'll think about this possible solution. No, that can't work. I'll think about this possible solution. No, that can't work. And I'll just keep going in a circle on all of these things that I've already gone over and concluded that they can't work, but I'll just keep going over them again. Well, that I'll go back to that one. No, that still can't work. No, that one still can't work. I mean, it just becomes an endless loop. There's an emotion that's associated with that. It's kind of like a feeling of frustration. It's kind of like a feeling of intensity. I don't have a clear label to put on it, but that emotion, when I feel it, I now know, okay, this is what I need to get away from. I need to let go of that one because that one's just getting in my way in a big, big way.
Kind of like when you've lost something and you keep looking in the same drawer.
Right, exactly.
And it's like, I've looked in this drawer 3 times. I've taken everything out of the drawer. I've put it all back. I know it's not in there. Why do I keep looking? Like if I look one more time, the thing's going to appear.
I think they call that insanity, don't they? Repeating the same behavior over and over again, expecting a different result.
Are you saying I'm insane? Yeah. I think that's right. I think it's confusion, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, but you're right. And I hadn't thought about this before. And it's so enlightening that when we do whatever strategy that works for us, like you said, getting up and going to talk to someone, going to talk to your wife about something, anything else, or me telling my brain, yeah, you work on this. I'm going to go to sleep now. We're letting go of the emotional part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, it's almost the same thing as deciding that you're going to view a sensation as pleasurable instead of painful, right? I mean, we've taken that judgment and emotion away from it and said, okay, it's just this thing that's happening. As soon as I get away from it, I'll be able to think about it differently.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love the label that Linda Armstrong gives to the process you just described of asking your brain to solve a problem while you sleep. She calls it going to night school. And
yes, I love that. I've heard that before. One of my favorite books on alchemy that has a chapter called The Night School. And that's exactly what it's about, right? Yeah. It's like the things that we learn that we actually discover about ourselves and learn while we're sleeping. That's like,
And she actually takes it to an nth degree, because not only does she use it to solve immediate problems, but occasionally she'll feel like she's kind of in the mood to learn something new. So she'll say, okay, you know, inner being, spirit, non-physical spirit, download something to me. Give me something to download overnight so that I can learn something new in night school.
And, you know,
I like that.
In the time that we're in and the things we've been talking about, like relationship wise, that's one of the things that we can do is choose the perspective of what is this teaching me about me? If we're having any kind of relationship stuff going on that feels stressful, is what is this teaching me about me?
Mm-hmm.
What is this showing me about myself? Because, you know, it's always a big mirror of something going on.
That's
and
true.
So what is it? And that's why I actually, the experience that we had with the people that were so upset, I actually thought it was kind of, I don't really want to do it every day, but
no.
I did think it was cool to observe my own response and reaction and to question myself, what would I do different if this happened again? I thought my response was fine, but I could even make it better, I think.
From what you told me, it sounded like your response was stellar. Neither one of you got upset about it. Neither one of you fed into the frustration they were feeling and expressing. You were kind of bewildered, which is quite understandable. I think I would have been bewildered. Anybody would have been bewildered by that situation.
Yeah.
But you didn't attach to it. And that's
well, I think at the very beginning, it was like one of the people said, this is a neighborhood. And it was like, it's our neighborhood. You know, there was a little bit of, right?
Oh, there was a little bit of
friction at first. Yeah. But then it was just like, when it kept going on and on and on and on and on, it's like, okay, wow, this is extraordinary. And how do I want to respond to this? I just want to be like, I hope you have a better day.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you're
pretty
day.
Much. Yeah. Throw a little love their way. They obviously need it.
So, yeah. So I think that though, always asking what we can learn about ourselves. Even this situation you were talking about, getting stuck in a place, figuring something out. You've learned so much about yourself. You've learned that one of the things that really works for you is to get up and move around, think about something else, talk about something else, focus on something else before you come back. And I would almost bet that if you had cataloged this thing for the past year that you've been working on, you know, developing this knowledge, that those times have gotten shorter and shorter.
Like, oh, definitely. No doubt at all.
Yeah. And that's so cool.
It is. Yeah. I mean, like, it's not cool necessarily.
Personal, it, your computer is going faster and faster.
Yeah, that's right.
Your own personal brain computer. It's going faster and faster. You're training it to go faster.
and talk about, you know, you mentioned earlier how we can choose to experience something that is not so pleasant in a more pleasant term if we wish to. We can kind of reframe it.
Yeah.
Unintentionally, that's what's happened to me with the programming. Because I hadn't done programming for a few years. I thought I'd left programming behind deliberately, intentionally, with no plan of going back. And then I found myself last fall kind of resignedly saying, oh, I guess I have to do this one myself. I can't find someone else who can do it. And kind of talked myself into it and had the kinds of resistances that you might expect that go along with that emotion. And I was experiencing all of them as I was going along. And yet over time, I was learning how to relax to it, how to accept what was going on, how to find some joy in learning and so forth. And like I described to Louise just 2 days ago, I think it was, if you look at like the Abraham Hicks scale, right, the emotional guidance scale,
yep.
You've got like 22 items on the scale and the top third are positive and the bottom two thirds are negative and all that stuff. When I first started this project, I was probably close to the bottom of that scale. Mm-hmm. Now I'm near the neutral point, which isn't joy, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was 6 months ago.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So
I bet there are moments of joy, you know, because it feels so good.
Yeah.
I mean, from my experience anyway, building anything that has to do with computers, there are those moments of great joy when it finally works.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it's the payoff for all the damn struggle. Well,
the initial ones were relief rather than joy. But yes, your point is well taken.
Right.
Like, oh my God, I actually got something to work. Who would have known?
At least it's just like, oh, it's not broken anymore. Yeah. Well,
but the unexpected part, this is the part I was leading up to. The unexpected thing that happened out of all this is that as the pandemic came along, I had already developed the habit of doing this work on a day-to-day basis. So what else was I going to do? I'm at home. I'm going to continue to do the project.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, now as I'm working on the project, the pandemic goes right out of my head. I am completely 100% unaware of it. And I only become aware when I come out of the work. But as long as I'm doing that work, I don't have any awareness of it at all. Now, I didn't expect that when I first started, not even close.
But that's so fantastic too, because when you're completely out of it for that period of time, there's nothing that could be aligned with it.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And none of us can remove ourselves completely from everything going on in the world, but to have those moments or chunks of time of respite like that, I think that's important because that helps with that allostatic load that we talked about.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, believe it or not, and I still have to kind of shake my head when I even say this, when I think the thought, but I actually appreciate having the software work to do because it gets away from the other thing.
No,
it's like,
seriously.
Oh, it's relief. It's actually relief to do programming. Who would have thought that could happen?
Who would have thought? Now, okay, this is exactly what we're talking about, though, because we're talking about the concept of a blessing in disguise.
Right.
Not that the pandemic is a blessing. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is so often we judge a certain thing as we label it as a certain thing. And it turns out it can be something completely different.
Yeah.
So this work for you has shifted into something completely different. It's now offering you a respite from whatever's going on. I think it's, we can recognize that that everything is that way.
Yes.
Everything in our experience can be looked at from whatever angle we want to look at it from.
Absolutely true. And that's really, I think, the big lesson. If we can, I can't emphasize this part enough. I didn't plan this. I didn't plan this thing to happen this way.
Yeah.
What I had done and what I've been doing for the last 10 years since I started, you know, 7.5 years since I started doing the podcast, 10 years or so since I started learning about LOA, is focusing my attention on learning how to feel better. Doing, you know, just one step at a time, little micro shifts, finding this thing that I like, finding that experience that I like. Focusing more and more, getting drawn back over and over again to the stuff that I don't like, but persistently just insisting every once in a while, I'm going to focus on something that I like and getting into that habit more and more. That pattern, I am convinced, is why I had this experience, because I kept looking for something that felt better, even if I didn't know how I was going to find it.
I was going to say, even if you didn't identify it as being that at first. Yeah. Just because it had to find you.
That's right.
Because of the alignment process.
Yes.
Yeah,
that
that's
alignment
it.
Process let it come in. And
yeah.
It was unintentional. It was certainly not planned, but it was very welcome. Very,
right?
Very welcome.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff.
That's awesome.
We talk often about how relationships are involved with every aspect of our lives. This is, for me, this is about the relationship with ourselves. This is about my relationship with myself. And it's, I guess we think of our partners as our primary relationship. I think the relationship with ourselves is actually the primary relationship.
It is. Everything is based off of that.
Yeah.
Every experience in your life is directly connected to your sense of identity. And that identity grows out of your relationship with yourself, what you think of yourself, the stories you tell about yourself, like that's all part and parcel to your relationship with yourself. So everything, it's like a mandala, and that's the middle. Everything sprouts out of that. So it's so important to tend to that relationship, which is why I said when you have stresses that are, whether they're with another person, they're with your partner, they're with other things going on, we can always ask ourselves, what is there for me to learn about myself through all of this? Because what happens when I learn more about you? I deepen my relationship with you, right? So when I learn more about myself, I'm deepening my relationship with myself.
Right.
And everything's going to grow out of that. So you want to tend to it.
It's a very powerful message. By the way, I had to share one other thing that Jeffrey shared in the live stream. He says, Abraham Hicks talks about taking a nap when we're facing resistance. So I feel like I'm following Abraham's advice. Unintentionally, yeah. But I am following it.
I know someone who is an expert manifester, and I am not a good napper. So
yeah, me neither.
Like, I just don't fall asleep in the daytime. But that's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
Something's bothering her. She's trying to manifest a certain thing. She just goes and takes a nap. So many times she wakes up and the thing just has worked itself out or whatever. It's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. By the way, besides my primary relationship with me and my other primary relationship with my wife and my good relationship with you here, there's also the relationship with all of our listeners, and I want to encourage more of them to become listeners. So let me take a moment to invite people who are not yet subscribers, become a subscriber. Please do. We really love to have you involved. And we love to have, if you can be part of the live stream, that's even more fun, but most people can't do that. That's fine. You know, people have different schedules. But at least become a subscriber and get all the episodes that we do 5 days a week coming right to your device automatically. It's very simple to do. If you have not figured out how to do it yourself, just go to the website, loatoday.net. And at the top, you'll see instructions on how to become a subscriber, usually one or two clicks. And then, like I said, check us out on YouTube, because when we record this, we live stream to YouTube. People actually tune in and join us and share comments and so forth. And we often try to include them in the conversation. But you can actually see what we look like. You can see Cindy with her flowers behind her. You can see me with my, you know, planetary background and so forth. And so that just kind of adds to the fun. But find us on YouTube by searching for LOA Today podcast videos. Subscribe and click the little bell so you get notified. And follow us both ways. You know, follow us on YouTube and follow us on the podcast, and keep getting your daily dose of happy, because look what focusing on happy did for me. I've been focusing on happy for like the last 10 plus years. Unintentionally, I attracted this thing that I thought I didn't want to do, and it turned into an absolute blessing in the middle of the pandemic. I mean, that's the kind of serendipities that come just from focusing on happy. So focus on happy.
Agree.
I love it. So thank you very much, Cindy. As thank usual, you. Your insights are fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
Plus, your flowers are really fabulous, too. I just have to say.
Gorgeous.
They're gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Scott, you did a great job on that one. No doubt.
I'll tell him.
Thank you, live streamers. We appreciate you. And especially we thank you to our podcast listeners as well. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.